Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, the network for social justice. Today, our show has several hot stories and an important interview, all very relevant in this week when we commemorate Dr. Martin Luther King Jr.'s legacy as a civil rights leader and an advocate for the poor, among other causes that he championed. Today on our Capitol Report, we'll have the latest reactions to President Donald Trump's vulgar comments regarding immigrants from Black and Hispanic regions of the world, comments that many are condemning as racist. Then from El Cajon, we'll have a report on citations issued this weekend to local activists who defied a ban on feeding the homeless in public parks. The homeless advocates say their efforts, including civil disobedience, honor the legacy of Dr. King. But the city contends its temporary ban is justified to prevent spread of hepatitis. Later on in our show, we'll have an in-depth interview with Seamus Syed. He's a Republican running for Congress against Congressman Duncan Hunter. Now, a grand jury has been convened and issued a subpoena in a federal investigation into Hunter's alleged use of campaign funds for personal use, and this could possibly lead to an indictment. Seamus Syed says he's a fiscal conservative and a social moderate. A son of immigrants who owns a translation business working with refugees and immigrants, Syed is speaking out forcefully against racially charged policies of the Trump administration, especially those targeting people who, like his family, have come to America seeking a better life for their families. We'll also have news about some upcoming local events honoring Dr. Martin Luther King, including a march in San Diego and a Lemon Grove event honoring local civil rights leaders. So stay tuned for today's edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show, where East County matters. This is East County Magazine's Capitol Report, bringing you the latest news and newsmakers from our nation's capital.
This is Gene Carpenter with a Capitol Report. The Washington Post, citing multiple sources, reported Friday that during a meeting with several senators meant to hammer out bipartisan immigration legislation, President Donald Trump made a vulgar racial remark regarding immigrants from Africa, Haiti, and El Salvador. Trump reportedly asked, "Why are we having all these people from whole countries come here?" He then suggested that the U.S. needs more immigration from countries like Norway, which is predominantly white. As for including protections into the bill for Haitians who came to America as refugees after hurricanes and an earthquake devastated their island nation, Trump added, "Take them out." The president later claimed he didn't use those exact words, but admitted his tone was tough. At a meeting with Black leaders, he later refused to answer questions on the matter, but did not deny his choice of words. At least one senator, Dick Durbin, a Democrat, went on record to confirm that the president did use the words repeatedly, which others had confirmed off record to the Post. Durbin also indicated that one Republican senator, Lindsey Graham, spoke up in the meeting to object to the president's words. Senator Graham issued a statement a day later confirming Durbin's account. Graham states, "Following comments by the president, I said my piece directly to him yesterday. The president and all those attending the meeting know what I said and how I feel. I've always believed that America is an idea, not defined by its people, but by its ideals. Diversity has always been our strength, not our weakness. In reforming immigration, we cannot lose these American ideals." He added pointedly, "I appreciate Senator Durbin's statements and have enjoyed working with him and many others on this important issue. I believe it is vitally important to come to a bipartisan solution to the immigration and border challenges we face today." Two other Republican senators, Bob Godlatte and Tom Cotton, claim they didn't recall the president's exact words. The president's comments and attitude have sparked a storm of controversy globally and locally. United Nations human rights spokesman Rupert Colville denounced Trump's remarks as shocking and shameful and undeniably racist. While Trump is not the first president to utter a profane word, his remark differs from predecessors who directed curse words at a specific individual with whom they disagreed, or in Lyndon Johnson's case, a chicken salad that he disliked. Trump's tarring of an entire continent, Africa, populated by primarily blacks, as well as Haiti and El Salvador, home to predominantly black and Hispanic people, follows his long pattern of denigrating people of color, from his past remarks suggesting Mexican immigrants were rapists, to his urging crowds at his campaign rallies to beat up black protesters, to his refusal to dispatch appropriate aid to Puerto Rico, still suffering blackouts months after a hurricane. CNN reporter Anderson Cooper, who covered Haiti during past natural disasters, choked back tears in a broadcast report in which he described the courage and heroism shown by Haitians rescuing others. "Let me be clear, the people of Haiti have been through more, withstood more, fought back against more injustice than our president ever has," Cooper said bluntly. Locally, Alliance San Diego director Andrea Guerrero denounced Trump's comments as reprehensible, adding, "Like statements he has made throughout the year, these statements encourage others to vilify immigrants and people viewed as different. This has consequences and affects people's lives." She added, "This is a moment of truth, a moment to reflect on our values, values of decency, respect, and compassion, and call this president to account for his treatment of others. Now is the time to stand firmly and fiercely in the values that hold us together. This is the most powerful way to honor the legacy of Dr. King and every trailblazing leader that has carved the path to building the beloved community with integrity and courage."
This is Miriam Raftery with a local government report from El Cajon. Defying a City of El Cajon ban on feeding homeless people in public places, over a dozen individuals were given misdemeanor citations by El Cajon police on Sunday and then released. Participants said the event was held on Martin Luther King birthday weekend to carry on the legacy of Reverend King. In his 1964 lecture to Nobel laureates, Dr. King voiced concerns about those who, quote, "have no houses or beds to sleep in," and he added, "if we feel this is a profound moral fact, we cannot be content to see men hungry, to see men victimized with starvation and ill health, when we have the means to help them." El Cajon's city council voted to adopt a temporary ban on feeding the homeless in public places during the countywide hepatitis emergency declaration, since there have been many cases among the homeless in the outbreak of hepatitis, which county health officials believe originated in El Cajon. The ban does not apply to feeding homeless people in churches or other private property, and El Cajon Mayor Bill Wells recently attended a homeless feeding at a local church, where local refugees helped to feed the homeless. The mayor praised that effort as, quote, "the right way to help the homeless." Mayor Wells, when contacted by East County Magazine after the citations were issued in the park, said that he was not aware of the police action ahead of time. He told us, "The police are always on their own in these types of actions. They are out there enforcing laws." When asked about the irony of such an action being carried out on Martin Luther King Jr. birthday weekend, Wells replied, "It is all about people complying with the law." But homeless advocate Mark Lane told KUSI News that the civil disobedience in El Cajon was in line with Reverend King's own actions. He noted, "Martin Luther King said that if a law is morally wrong, you are obligated to reject it." Lane said of El Cajon's ban on feeding homeless people in public parks, "it's a morally corrupt law." At the last El Cajon City Council meeting, Lane made clear his intent to continue feeding the homeless in defiance of the ban. Lifting his hands in the air and turning to several El Cajon police officers situated in the back of the chamber, he said, "Here, arrest me." Advocates for the homeless say the real public health hazard isn't feeding the homeless, but rather lack of bathrooms in Wells Park. Bathrooms there have remained closed for weeks due to a sewer line break. Assistant City Manager Graham Mitchell at a recent council meeting said the expense of replacing the sewer pipe is high, and so it will be some time before repairs can be made. Porta-potties have been set up in the meantime. Amateur video uploaded to the Facebook page of local activist and assembly candidate James Elia shows El Cajon police officers writing citations as members of the protest group cheer in support of those issued the citations. The video indicates the group has a GoFundMe page to cover the citation costs and plans to return in 2 weeks. Those arrested are planning to file a class action lawsuit against the city, they said. A 2008 state law, however, actually requires that cities and counties mandate permits for food service at public events. But it turns out that law may conflict with the U.S. Constitution. David Loy, legal director of the American Civil Liberties Union, or ACLU, in San Diego, sent a December 6th letter to El Cajon City Attorney Morgan Foley. It stated that the ordinance, quote, "presents significant First Amendment concerns." because it prohibits food sharing only for charitable purposes and thus is, quote, punishing only those who share food to express their religious or political beliefs in ministry or charity, but not those who share food for other purposes. Now, protecting public health is a compelling governmental interest, Loy observes. But, he says, the city has less restrictive alternatives for preventing disease transmission, such as creating a permitting and inspection program, requiring proper sanitation and food handling requirements, and enforcing existing laws against littering. Loy's letter concludes, I look forward to the city's response and hope that this can be resolved without litigation. East County Magazine has asked the city for its response to Loy's letter, and we've not received a reply. Councilman Gary Kendrick says the ban on feeding of homeless individuals has been misconstrued by protesters because the city has not banned food distribution to the homeless except on the city's public property, and he says feedings are regularly available other places. But the ACLU contends this distinction is still discriminatory against those who wish to share food with others in public places. The county is expected to lift the hepatitis A emergency declaration in the next few weeks, since the number of new cases has dropped sharply, and El Cajon officials have previously said they would lift their feeding ban when the public health emergency ends. Until then, one potential solution to avoid litigation could be for the city to amend its temporary ordinance to allow public feedings of the homeless, provided those distributing food follow safe food handling rules and get a permit in accordance with state law, and also clean up litter afterwards.
You're listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, the network for social justice.
Now, straight from the headlines, bringing you our latest top newsmakers. This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, recording at our studio in East County. Today, my very special guest is Seamus Syed. He is a Republican running in the 50th Congressional District against Congressman Duncan Hunter, joining a growing pack of candidates on both sides of the aisle seeking to replace Duncan Hunter. Syed, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Miriam, for having me.
We all know that Congressman Hunter is under investigation by the U.S. Department of Justice for allegedly using campaign funds for personal expenses. This is a criminal investigation. And moments before we began taping today's show, word came out over the wire that a federal grand jury right here in San Diego, folks, has issued a subpoena to a local business regarding its ties to the Hunter campaign. And apparently this is on charges or issues that are separate from what the Justice Department is already looking into, what the Congressional Ethics Panel in Washington and Congress was looking into before the Justice Department took that investigation out of their hands. The grand jury is asking for records that go back to 2009, which is 7 years earlier than the time period for which Hunter's finances were previously under scrutiny by the Justice Department. Now, we don't yet know who the witness or the business is that's been subpoenaed, but obviously Congressman Hunter's troubles seem to only be growing deeper. Seamus, what is your reaction to this news?
We really can't be too surprised. We knew it was simply a matter of time that something like this was going to happen. We have to appreciate the timely nature of when it came out just before we started, but we really can't be too surprised. We knew this was coming.
Well, let's talk about you and your campaign. Seamus, what is your reason for deciding that you want to run for Congress?
Well, Miriam, I can give you all the lofty answers, but the reality is I want to make a change. That is the sincere truth. There's those that talk about it on the sidelines, and there's those that do it. My goal is to do it. When the last election came out and the apparent presidential winner was now President Trump, there was a tremendous amount of division. The overall climate amongst my colleagues, amongst my business colleagues, amongst the country was really toxic.
Yeah.
And I felt something needed to be done. And that is really the reason. San Diego is my home. It's been my home for the better part of 40 years. And when you're seeing the climate to the degree of where it was at, you had to get in. I had to do something.
I want to take a moment and share with our listeners some of your biographical details. Seamus Syed was born in Canada. He came to the U.S. when he was 2 years old. He was raised in Poway, right here in the 50th Congressional District. He and his wife have raised two sons here, and he also owns a business called Interpreters Unlimited that has been recognized for its success by the Small Business Administration and Ernst & Young. He also holds a biology degree from UCSD. He says he's running to bring integrity and accountability to the office, and obviously the need for that is, seems to be becoming more apparent every day, while creating jobs and opportunities for all. He says he wants to reduce regulations on small businesses, work for health care reforms, put public safety first, and improve education for children, and his motto is treating everyone with respect to help all of us prosper. He's the son of immigrants, he's overcome barriers, and he works with immigrants and refugees in his family's interpreter's business. He also works with Heart for Refugees, and he and his family have actually adopted refugee families fleeing war and helped them find homes and jobs here in America. He also gives back as president of the FBI Citizens Academy Alumni Association, and he helps with efforts such as fundraising for homeless kids and publicizing National Missing Children's Day. He has served on the Captain's Advisory Board of the San Diego Police Department, working to help bring hope to disadvantaged kids and helping officers to communicate effectively with diverse communities. That is quite a bio.
Thank you.
So, obviously, you're running a very successful business venture. Seamus, how would you describe the business landscape in the 50th Congressional District, and how does your experience as owner of one of the largest private businesses here prepare you for Congress?
Well, we understand what the businesses need. We understand the challenges that the businesses are facing. When you look at the tremendous amount of regulations that are there presently in place towards small businesses, it makes it very challenging to run it and to run it effectively.
How would you go about creating good-paying jobs and helping small businesses to thrive?
Well, the tax reform, there's various versions of the tax reform over the weeks prior to it being approved.
Correct.
The one area of the tax reform focusing on the area for business is the fact that it cut taxes for small businesses significantly. What many don't realize is 80% of San Diego businesses are small businesses.
Yeah, it's the backbone here in East County of the economy.
Absolutely. And 75% of San Diego's workforce are employed by these small businesses. The reality is, despite contrary belief, the 20% that we're saving, we're not pocketing. And most of my small business owner colleagues are not taking and pocketing it. We have no choice but to put it back in our businesses. We have no choice because there's no other place for us to get the cash. I know me personally, and within our company, I know that there are three people that I want to hire. All of three, I can't afford to hire them because what I would be spending on them, I'm paying in taxes. Thanks to this tax break, I will be able to create a job, maybe a job and a half as a result. And amongst my small business owner colleagues, they're right there. So the intent behind the tax breaks was to help create more jobs.
And how effective do you think the tax bill was at that?
I'll speak for myself and my small business owner colleagues. Very effective.
Do you have any other ideas besides supporting that portion of the tax bill that helped small businesses? Do you have any other ideas for helping them to grow and thrive?
Well, let's take healthcare. You know, the healthcare is a hot topic today, especially with the repeal or attempted repeal and or the undermining of ACA.
Correct, which basically the Republicans have led that effort. It's very easy to criticize Obamacare or the Affordable Care Act, but what they haven't really done is come up with a viable alternative plan so far. They've been about repeal, repeal and replace, but they didn't know what to replace it with. And as you say, now we've seen undermining by, in the tax bill, they got rid of the mandate for having insurance, but that means that rates will go up for the rest of the folks that are still on the Affordable Care Plan. So what would your alternative be?
Give small businesses the ability to provide it for their staff, for their team, for their employees. Right off the bat, you're going to decrease turnover. Of course, as we all know, turnover has a tremendous cost to an employer.
Mm-hmm.
If you give us an opportunity to save the money and put it towards the healthcare and towards healthcare costs, or create some sort of incentive or tax break to do so, let us manage it bottom line. Don't make it mandatory. Allow them the tools to go out and get it on their own for their own.
Okay. And I know you've told me that at your business, you do have healthcare for all of your employees, even though you're under the size where it's mandatory.
That is correct. That has been a staple of our company since day one.
Okay. You are the son of immigrants, and you have worked to help refugees who are new to America. The Trump administration has taken a hardline stance, trying to shut the door to many refugees and also deport many immigrants, even some who've been here for decades. And these are actions that Congressman Hunter has generally supported. Do your views on this differ, and where do you come down on protection for the Dreamers, those who were brought here as children of undocumented immigrants?
Well, immigration is a hot topic and a topic that's near and dear on many levels. Well, let's start off with the Dreamers. We have to give the Dreamers a chance to succeed. They are here because, well, they didn't have a choice. They were brought here. And the Dreamers are trying to do something to give back to society and give back to the country. And they're going about it in really the most admirable, right way to do it. When you look at immigration, of course, you think of one, you think of Dreamers, and then, of course, being right here in San Diego, you think of the wall.
Yeah, which Hunter is all for, and, of course, President Trump is powering forward on. What is your stance on a border wall? Is that the right way to provide border security?
Well, let's drill down into focusing what the objective is, border security. Can we improve border security by better spending $18 billion? I'm sure we can. But the goal is to improve border security.
Do you believe that a border wall is the most cost-effective and necessary means of protecting border security, not just against undocumented immigrants, but these days, of course, there are concerns about terrorists and drug dealers crossing the border?
The wall definitely has its challenges, and no, I don't believe an $18 billion project is the solution to solving border security. Period. There's definitely other ways that can be done, means that employ technologies, significant technologies that are out there, many of which are being developed by companies right here in San Diego.
Right, high-tech surveillance and things like that.
Exactly.
Not to mention just beefing up maybe the number of Border Patrol agents in areas where that might be necessary.
With $18 billion, you can do a lot.
You can probably still have a lot left over for some of these other problems.
Exactly, and you can do a lot to improve the well-being of San Diegans right here, and many of those right here just outside of the 50th.
Yeah, and speaking of those right here, you have voiced concerns about the homelessness issue, which, of course, has come to the forefront recently with the hepatitis outbreak in San Diego. Are there federal actions that you believe could be taken to reduce homelessness in our area or across the nation?
It's important that we truly identify the homeless problem. We see it on the news, but as San Diegans, we need to see it firsthand to see really how bad it is. I'm a marathon runner, half marathon runner, and I train right along the harbor waterfront.
Oh, good for you.
And on an early Saturday morning, on a 2 mile, 3 mile stretch, I see approximately 11 to 15 individuals that are visibly without a home and sleeping there. So, and that's only on a 2 mile stretch, on a 2 mile stretch on a 5 foot wide sidewalk.
Very disturbing, and certainly it's been a growing problem out here in East County with encampments along the riverbeds and even in areas of downtown Oklahoma and so forth.
Absolutely. And the encampments are all hidden, so most of the public don't realize that they're there.
Yeah.
So what can, at a federal level, what can you do? I'm going to circle this right back around to the small businesses. Give us incentives to bring in these individuals back into the job force.
So just like we've had incentives for hiring, say, veterans, maybe incentives to hire those among the homeless who are capable of holding down a job.
Exactly. Now, keep in mind that the homeless population, many of them have been in that situation for a long time.
Right.
So getting them back into the workforce, that transition in and of itself needs to be identified.
Correct. So if they need, for example, help to overcome addictions, or they need job training, maybe something like that.
Exactly.
One major area where we see big differences between the Democratic and the Republican Party recently is on the environment. Years ago, the Republican Party used to include people like Teddy Roosevelt, who founded the National Park System, and Richard Nixon was the one who established the Environmental Protection Agency over concerns about pollution. And yet we've seen the Trump administration working to undermine the Environmental Protection Agency's mission, to open up California's coasts to offshore drilling, and perhaps most importantly, saying they don't believe in climate change and seeking to pull the U.S. out of the Paris Climate Change Accord. Seamus, where do you stand on environmental issues such as these?
Miriam, to begin with, we need to identify it, and it needs to be identified, the problem. The change needs to be identified at the top. If it's not identified at the top, we're spinning our wheels down here.
And you're talking about climate change.
Exactly.
Which is, yeah, the elephant in the room here on
exactly.
environmental issues.
So when you look right here in San Diego, when you have a month long of humidity, or you look down in South Florida, out in the Gulf Coast and the Atlantic, where you have two back-to-back hurricanes.
Right. Iguanas freezing and falling out of trees, and here in California, the worst year for wildfires ever last year. Both extremes can be symptoms of climate change.
Absolutely. It needs to be identified, and it needs to be identified at the highest levels. If it can't be acknowledged at the highest levels, then we are spinning our wheels.
So you believe that climate change is real?
100%.
Do you believe that man is contributing to it, and maybe the most important question, that man's actions can help reverse it?
Yes, and yes, and we've already proven we've done so.
Okay. What steps would you support in Congress toward that end?
Well, we can instill legislation to define it, number one. And number two, work towards everyday method to fix it. For example, either mandatory recycling of certain items, just like we have in California regarding the plastic bags mm-hmm. and the grocery bags. They're simple items. It doesn't need to be complicated. You know, it's the same mantra, think globally, act locally.
What about incentivizing businesses that offer clean alternatives, such as, for example, the solar industry?
100%. And we can't get rid of the tax credits for consumers that buy such.
Yeah, that it seems to be kind of a backwards thing. On the one hand, they're saying, well, let's get rid of all the incentives for solar and for consumers to go solar. But then we've got to drill off of 98% of our coastlines. Where do you stand on the opening up San Diego's coastline to offshore drilling?
I am not for it, not one bit.
Okay. And interestingly, I saw figures today from the federal government that said that 88% of America's power that we use today is produced domestically already. So it's a little bit of a misdirection, I think, when the president says he wants to reduce our dependence on foreign energy. We could probably close that 12% gap, do you think, with things like incentivizing solar and conservation?
Yes, we can. And we can also use more of what we already have reserved.
We have talked a little bit about wildfires. We've touched on that. What ideas do you have for any actions federally that might improve prevention of wildfires and also beef up resources for firefighting? Because inevitably we know that more and more fires are likely to occur, unfortunately, with climate change.
We have to give credit to and reinforce the first responders. First and foremost, if we can stop it right as it starts, that's where we can make the biggest changes, number one. Number two, there are technologies out there that can help determine various moisture levels in fire danger areas.
What is your stance on Second Amendment rights and gun ownership versus the concerns over gun violence in America?
One, we support the rights absolutely and equally. We need to enforce the laws that are already in place.
Another issue that we haven't heard talked about enough, I think, in the media, is internet access and internet privacy. Now, the Trump administration recently rolled back net neutrality, which could impact accessibility of the internet. It could make it a pay-to-play situation, basically, for consumers. And Representative Hunter has voted to reduce internet privacy protections for consumers after he took big donations from the telecom industry. What's your take on this issue?
Well, we go back. There's a couple issues identified, Miriam, one of which is that of ethics, first and foremost. And mm-hmm. we talked a little bit about that at the beginning, but there's an ethical issue right there, first and foremost. Number two, net neutrality, or the repeal of, is going to affect those that right now we're in a generation that has the most dependence on it ever.
Correct.
Pay to play is going to make it very challenging and is going to create even bigger issues, some of which that may not have even been considered.
Yeah, we already see a kind of a digital divide in places like rural East County, where some residents still have dial-up access to the internet that's very, very slow. And this obviously puts their children in schools at a disadvantage. It puts people who may work from home at a disadvantage. And certainly if we see it slowing down in other places, it could begin to have an impact even for people who live in urban areas.
I do want to add that the focus, my focus, will be on the district and mm-hmm. keeping in touch with the district and understanding where the weaknesses of the district are and how we can improve that once in Washington.
That leads to a question. Congressman Hunter has been criticized by some constituents for not holding very many town halls. He did have one recently in Ramona that didn't go so well for him, a lot of controversy. It was in a very small location that only held 300 people. He said he'd hold another, and he hasn't done it. Would you pledge to hold regular town halls in your district, in different parts of the district, so that ultimately you could be accessible to any constituent who wants to come and meet their congressman and voice concerns about issues and hear what you have to say?
Absolutely. That's a major platform point for me, and that's transparency. At the end of the day, by definition, as a representative, my job will be, should the 50th vote me in, to represent you, to represent the 50th. Not represent my interests, not represent the next congressman's interests, not represent the interest of XYZ Corporation. My focus is there for the 50th. And I can't stress that enough.
Okay. We need to pause a moment for a station ID. You're listening to the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ, 89.1 FM Descanso, the network for social justice broadcasting from the heart of East County. And now we're back with Seamus Syed, who is a Republican candidate running in the 50th Congressional District against Congressman Duncan Hunter. There are several other issues that I'd like to talk about. You have mentioned that you believe education for children is a very big concern. You are a father of two. Can you elaborate a little bit on your views on education?
Well, let's start off with going into a classroom. Many of us, I'll speak for myself, it's been over 20 some odd years since I've been into a school, a high school classroom. And I asked that all of us try and see what it was like then and try to have, make an opportunity to see it today. I did a presentation to a classroom, a few weeks ago. I asked the teacher, I said, how many kids do you have in your class? She said 41 children are in her class. Now from 20 years ago, 22 years ago, from when I was in high school, that's an increase of over 30% more children.
Yeah, they really can't give enough individual attention to children when classes are so big. It's not the teacher's fault. It's a reflection, in part, on school funding. When we start to reduce the funding for public education, the school districts have to take that money from somewhere. And very often, it winds up being teachers getting laid off and those that are left having larger class sizes. So you can't have it both ways. You know, do you support strong funding for public education? And then while we're on it, what are your views on, you know, use of vouchers for parents who feel their child may be better served somewhere else?
Let me start off with the first part. 100% support greater resources going back to the public school systems. And I have to give a tremendous amount of credit to the teachers because the teachers are doing so much with not a whole lot.
Yeah.
When I was there in the same classroom, I asked another teacher who happened to be there and asked a question. I said, how many of your supplies that are there in the classroom were bought for you? And what did you buy? And she pointed out to me roughly about three of the five items that she pointed into a particular section of the classroom, she had bought herself.
Yeah, that's a very common problem for the teachers. No, I can't think of another job where you're supposed to just go buy your own supplies when you're an employee.
But look where it's coming from. It's coming from a place that their interest is for their children and is for the kids.
Yeah, they care about the kids.
And we have to credit that interest. And we have to do whatever we can to give them the tools to do it because it's coming from a very sincere and very genuine place.
Okay. The Republican Party in general has been supportive of things like vouchers. They call it increased parental choice. And in some cases, you know, increased parental choice can be a good thing if you have a gifted or talented child or a special needs child, an artistic child. But on the other hand, if we put money into vouchers for private schools, that's also taking money away from the public school district. So where do you come down on that issue?
We need to treat children with the special attention that they deserve. We can't group them all into a single group. We can't treat them all as a single group. We need to give children the respective focus that they need to thrive. And is vouchers the answer? I don't believe that's the only answer. There could be other programs that could be out there that could provide a solution. But regardless of what some of these other programs could be or what could be created, at the end of the day, we just need more money coming into the system. I want that choice. Right now, we don't have that choice.
Okay. Thank you for that answer. Let's talk about women's issues. This has been all over the news with the Me Too movement and all of the issues of sexual harassment that we've seen. But it's also an issue on other things. For example, Congressman Hunter voted against equal pay for women, and he co-authored a bill that would have outlawed every abortion from conception on. Where do you stand on some of these issues of concern for women?
Let me start off with the Me Too movement. Me Too movement is more than simply saying, I support you as a male to a female.
Right.
As a father of two boys, that focus, that support is really going to be done by what I teach my boys and how they are going to be out in the world interacting with women.
Very good answer. I like that one.
Thank you. And it is very, very sincere and very genuine.
Yeah.
And which leads me into the next part. I have five nieces ranging from the 20s down to the low single digits.
Mm-hmm.
I have a mom. I have a sister. I have sister-in-laws. I have a wife. I cannot be that person to make a decision about whether they can or cannot terminate a pregnancy and face them. I could not make that decision for them and come back and face them. I could not make that decision and come back and face you. I have full faith and full trust that all females have the capacity to make that decision, and taking into consideration the spiritual factors, the health factors, the financial factors. And if they don't have that capacity to make that decision, then we provide them that respective counseling. But you let them make that decision and trust that they'll make that decision.
Okay, thank you very much for that thoughtful response on that issue. Racism has reared its head in the current administration, and we're also seeing erosions in protections of things like the Voting Rights Act due to a recent Supreme Court decision and the diminishment of affirmative action. What comments would you make on race relations and civil rights in America today?
A big part of that, Miriam, is why I'm running. The division is so great right now. It's very much a hot topic. And as a visibly ethnic person, it's something we live and breathe every day. We need to focus that we are all Americans first. Whether you're Democrat or Republican, purple or yellow, man or woman, the division is so great. When you bring up the question of the race relations right here in the country, we need to acknowledge that we are all Americans, first and foremost. And we need to treat each other with that respect.
Mm-hmm.
The division that's been created is really disturbing. Very, very disturbing. And we as lawmakers, potential lawmakers, need to make every effort to improve the relations, at least vocalize that. Just because it's being, the rhetoric is coming from the top and it's saying something quite the opposite, we need to take those efforts to do something about it. We need to focus that we are all Americans first. Put aside the color, put aside the label. I know this is a bit of a lofty goal here, but we need to step aside from the labels that identify each respective race, whether it's white, black, brown, and just look at them as a person, look at them as an American. If we can really train our mind to do that, and I know this is such a lofty goal, and I acknowledge that, but we need to focus on that. Race relations will improve if you look at someone else as a person first and not the exterior color of their skin.
Yeah. There's been a lot of speculation that this rise in sort of scapegoating immigrants, scapegoating minorities of all sorts, in part comes from disaffected white voters who've seen themselves slipping out of the middle class and into poverty, the disaffected base that President Trump so effectively motivated or reached out to in his campaign. What would you say to those folks, those disaffected, white, poor, or maybe formerly middle-class folks out there? And there's a lot of them here in the rural areas in East County, I might add.
We're all American. If we all look at each other as Americans and are fair about offering everyone everything, there's a tremendous amount of support out there. They are Americans too, period. Should they use another race to have as a scapegoat for their challenges? I wouldn't phrase it that way. I wouldn't want them to do that. But we, more importantly, they need to be fully aware of the resources that are available to them, not because they are white, not because someone else is not, but because they are American and these are rights that are available to them.
This comes back to that issue of listening. We've talked about town halls, but getting out into the rural areas, so many candidates come and go. They never visit some of these towns out here. They never hear the issues in areas where maybe people are farmers or they're living in rural poverty, the transportation issues and some of that. Is that something where you would commit to visit some of these towns that probably never saw their congressman before, and go out and actually hear what they have to say, regardless of what their race or religion or economic status might be?
Absolutely. Mike, goes back to what I've stated before, the focus is on the district. The focus is there. If we keep that at our forefront, yes, I will have an opportunity to interact. They will have an opportunity to interact. It doesn't have to be anything fancy. It doesn't have to be difficult. It doesn't have to be challenging. I don't need to organize a physical hall to do something. I can do something at a coffee shop. I can do something at a Costco and over pizza and dollar churros.
There you go. I would also like to ask you about the refugee issue. The Trump administration has sought to block refugees from many parts of the world from coming in, including six mostly Muslim nations. That's being fought out in the court, and yet many of these people are coming here from war-torn countries. You've seen it yourself. And we've had issues with, you know, racial profiling of Muslims on the one hand, and on the other hand, there is a legitimate concern about how do you keep terrorists out, people who might be affiliated with groups like ISIS or Al-Qaeda. What are your views on the refugee issue, as someone who has worked with refugees and known some of these folks firsthand?
That's a sensitive topic for us, for me and for my family, as you can imagine. We need to understand where they're coming from. And you need to try to paint the picture of where they're coming from. And, you know, I ask you to close your eyes and envision you being in a neighborhood that was designed for 100 people that has 1,000 people. And you walk out of your street, you walk out and it's not even a fully paved street. It's got a, you know, it's a rubble street, and you have gunshots in the background. You see a building across the way explode. You have a family that's coming to you that says, hey, we just lost so-and-so down the road. They were playing ball. So these individuals have no choice. They leave everything, everything behind. They simply take what they can carry and they make a dash. And in this case, in our family's case, they made a dash into the family that we've adopted. And many of the same families that my other family members have adopted, they made a dash for the Turkish border.
Yeah, from Iraq?
In our case, from Syria.
From Syria, okay.
So they ended up in Turkey. They ran to a safe ground, and they were eventually taken to Turkey. And there in Turkey, in the case of our family, he had severe health issues. And they chose not to operate on him, one, because he was of a different tribe.
Oh, wow.
Okay. And of a different religion of the physician.
So this is the kind of prejudice and life-threatening situations people are being put in these countries. It's not just about being bombed, which is bad enough, but it's about the religious discrimination that many of the religious minorities there face. It can be one Muslim sect against another, or it can be the Chaldean Christians or Jewish folks, whoever it may be, facing persecution in some of these parts of the world.
Exactly. Big difference between here and there. We are blessed to have laws that protect that here. Over there, those laws just don't exist.
What about the vetting? Do you believe the vetting is, Trump has called for extreme vetting? I mean, do you think that the answer is simply to make sure that we're properly vetting these folks, but not to exclude people where they're in eminently life-threatening situations?
Well, we need to define extreme vetting because I have firsthand knowledge of what this, what our family went through, what our adopted family went through.
Yeah, tell us about that.
That process in and of itself was over a 6-month process.
So they really have already been extremely vetted.
Absolutely.
Okay. You mentioned that your own family has endured some religious profiling after 9/11. Would you like to tell us about that?
Absolutely. So it's hard for me to say this and not laugh about it today, but I couldn't check in. I couldn't do an online boarding pass up until about 2012 timeframe because I would always have the four S's on a boarding card.
You're a Muslim of the Muslim faith, and so you believe you were racially profiled and kept off of flights in the wake of 9/11, even though you've lived here since you were 2 years old.
I'm thankful to say that I wasn't kept off of flights, but I definitely needed to get to the airport that additional hour so I can make it through security. Now, I do want to throw out there that we're very blessed to be in San Diego. I've had the, as a result of what law enforcement is doing to help prevent profiling. When we talk about racism and the climate, our law enforcement right here in San Diego, San Diego Police Department, the Sheriff's Department, has done a phenomenal job to create community policing programs so that police get to know the community and know that just because you are of X demographic or of Y race, that we're not here for that very reason. We're here because we appreciate your community. We're here to protect all. They're here to protect all. They're everybody's police.
Yeah, that's an important thing. And it's also worth mentioning, I know you told me before we went on the air, that ironically, although you were profiled on airplanes and at the airport, your own father very nearly lost his life in the 9/11 attack. So obviously you would be as concerned about terrorists as much as anybody.
Absolutely. And it was a very concerning and scary, quite frankly, 12 hours of not knowing.
He was scheduled on one of the flights that went to the buildings in 9/11.
That is correct. That is correct.
Wow.
And he changed his flight, forgetting that he had another engagement. He changed his flight just the day before.
Wow. Well, we're certainly glad for how that worked out for him in the long run. Congressman Hunter has served his country in the military. He was in active combat zones in Iraq and Afghanistan. Where do you stand on funding and support for the military and for the many military members and their families and veterans right here in San Diego?
Right off the bat, just a tremendous gratitude, respect, appreciation, and thanks to those that have served and those that are serving and the families that support those that serve. It means more to me than you realize, especially being right here in San Diego. Because many of my friends growing up, their families, their parents, their dad, their mom are served or have served. Keep it simple. I fully support and will support funding and increased funding for the military, period. Especially being right here in San Diego.
North Korea is emerging as an important foreign policy consideration with the president of North Korea, the dictator, threatening to launch nuclear weapons against the United States. President Trump basically taunting him in his various tweets, and Congressman Hunter has actually called for a first strike against North Korea, which has nuclear power, nuclear missiles that most experts believe could hit the U.S., including the West Coast. Do you agree or disagree with the stances that these two leaders have taken, and what would your approach be to handling the very serious North Korean nuclear threat?
I absolutely disagree with what both leaders have stated, one being a preemptive strike and the other with their taunting.
Yeah, the size of the nuclear button and so forth.
Amazing. So we need to focus on a diplomatic effort, stern efforts, but they need to be diplomatic. And again, we bring it right back to San Diego and we focus on our locale. We are the most prominent military stronghold nearest to Korea as a mainland.
Yeah, in other words, prime target if he did decide to let loose a nuclear bomb.
Exactly. As a mainland city, as a mainland military stronghold, we are as close as it gets. And it's already been demonstrated that North Korea has the ability to reach us. So, a diplomatic answer? quite frankly, must be the answer for San Diegans.
Okay, thank you very much. We have spoken about ethics, which obviously is going to be, I think, the issue defining this campaign with Congressman Hunter and all of his controversies. We've mentioned he's under investigation for criminal violations, and now as of, you know, this week, there's a grand jury subpoena also. He's also been accused of conflicts of interest in his voting record, such as taking a lot of money from the tobacco industry and then voting to ease regulation of e-cigarettes and, you know, vaping on the House floor and so forth. So my question to you would be, how can voters be assured that you will reflect their interests instead of special interests?
That is the definition of the job, Miriam. That is the definition of the job. I'm there to represent the 50th. The district comes first. The incumbent was just on the air the other day, and it was so apparent the disconnect he has from the voters, his voters, those that voted him in. And I really implore the voters to really vote for a candidate that's there for them, that's there to support them, and that's there to listen to them, whether it's being there for town halls, coffees in the district, just simply being visible and being part of the community.
Yeah, that's very important.
Absolutely. Being transparent with what's happening in Washington with the voters. There's a congressperson right here in San Diego that takes what they're going to be voting on in Washington and puts it out on their website for their constituents to provide their input.
Yeah, great idea.
That is transparency. When our president is tweeting public policy, there's no reason why your representative can't communicate with you on how to vote.
Now, some of those Trump tweets, of course, have been controversial in their own right, but let's talk about that for a moment. Congressman Hunter has been one of the earliest and strongest backers of President Trump, pretty much very loyal to the president, even though the president is now undergoing his own investigations by the special counsel, Robert Mueller, that's looking into possible collusion between the Trump campaign and Russia. And, you know, let's be clear, there have been indictments of some of his top campaign staff, and there's a couple of them that have already pled guilty to different charges. So I guess it begs the question, what's your take on the investigation into the president, and would you have a different stance, perhaps, on some of President Trump's issues and controversies than Congressman Hunter has? Where are the areas where you perhaps agree with the president, and are there some areas where you disagree, and what are your views on the Mueller investigation based on what's come out so far?
Well, with respect to the president, I don't want to give any input on where the investigation could be going because it would be purely speculative. We want to let the investigation run its course and see what happens.
But you don't think they should be firing the investigator that's been put in charge of the investigation?
Absolutely not. Absolutely not. They got to follow through with the checks and balances that are there. Mueller is there. The investigation is in place, and we have to let the government do its job and let these checks and balances follow through.
True, which could also exonerate the president, or not, but that remains to be seen.
Exactly. It does remain to be seen, but we need to let the investigation go through.
With the public approval of Congress itself scraping single digits, how would you help to end the partisan gridlock that so many Americans just seem to be fed up with, frequent threats of government shutdowns and so on and so forth?
That's the only company in the world that I know of that can not pay and shut down if the board can't get along and come to a consensus. With that being said, bipartisanship is one that I strongly believe in. I practice it. I practice it within my company. I practice it in my day-to-day, whether it's negotiating a turn or negotiating a contract or negotiating with a potential lawmaker. You have no choice. You have to do it. That is your job to do it.
So you would be willing to at least have discussions with folks on the other side of the aisle to reach a consensus on issues of importance to the nation?
100%. You can't look at their Democrat, their Republican, looking at the party first. Your job there is to work on public policy. And focusing on the public is where that should be.
Listeners, if you just tuned in, we've been speaking with Seamus Syed, who is a Republican running for Congress in the 50th Congressional District against Congressman Duncan Hunter. Seamus, I'm going to let you have the final word today. What else would you like our listeners to know about your candidacy for Congress?
Thank you, Miriam. First of all, thank you very much for the opportunity. My focus remains on the district and the people in the district and the voters in the district. My job is to represent them, represent you, not my interests and not the interest of other influencers. The incumbent was on TV the other day, and I go back to this because it was so apparent of how detached he was from the district. It really begs the question, where are the interests? My goal is to represent you, the 50th. My goal is to earn your trust, to earn your vote, and that you trust that I do the right thing once I'm in Washington.
Very good. And if listeners want to get more information about you or your campaign, do you have a website that they can visit?
Absolutely. Visit www.seamusforcongress.com.
That's S-H-A-M-U-S?
That is correct.
Okay. Well, very good. I want to thank you very much for taking the time to join us today on the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice.
Thank you.
This is Kajani Broaddus with the People Power Report. It's been nearly 50 years since civil rights leader Martin Luther King Jr. was slain by an assassin's bullet in April 1968. But his legacy was long-lasting, including his successful efforts to secure passage of the Civil Rights Act and Voting Rights Act. This month, the National Action Network in San Diego will host two events to honor Dr. King and those who have followed in his footsteps, also setting goals for continuing his efforts into the future. An event titled, Where Are We 50 Years Later, will be held on January 19th at the Lemon Grove Community Church in Lemon Grove at 7 p.m. The celebration will feature guest speaker Jane Elliott, an anti-racism activist who will discuss her historic Brown Eyes, Blue Eyes exercise. The event will also honor local civil rights leaders, including Black Political Association of California's president, Dr. William Blair, Dr. Cheryl Morrow, editor of the San Diego Monitor newspaper, and Alan Cabrera of Ideas Cabrera, and Raymond Wiley, an African-American man who has contended he was racially profiled by a San Diego police officer last year. In addition, to commemorate what would have been Dr. King's 88th birthday and set an agenda for the new year, the National Action Network will hold its second annual Martin Luther King Jr. Day march highlighting 100 ministers and the people. The annual King Day March, organized by the National Action Network, will be held January 15th starting at 2:30 p.m. This event will highlight the issues that Dr. King stood for. Participants should meet at 2 p.m. at Park Boulevard and B Street in San Diego. The march will end with a rally at City Hall that will highlight four key issues that activists hope to see addressed in 2018: homelessness, jobs, voting rights, and criminal justice police reform. For tickets and more information on these events, you can visit the National Action Network San Diego website at nansd.net.
This concludes today's edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show. We extend our appreciation to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso. We extend our appreciation to our sound technician, Jonathan Getz, and to our producer, Miriam Raftery. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Preble, Royalty Free Music, and Pond 5. If you would like to underwrite or sponsor the East County Magazine radio show, or get involved as a volunteer on our public interest news show, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org. We'll be back soon with another edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show.